This is the Welcome to Fatherhood Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Kelly, and I'm here to remind you, however you're listening and wherever you're listening, that as dads, we're just like moms. Except we're dads. Ha ha! Would you please go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, what's up, man? Obviously, thanks for having me on your podcast. Very cool. Welcome to Fatherhood. My name is Larry Hagner. I'm the founder of The Dad Edge. I'm the host of the podcast, also our mastermind community, the Dad Edge Alliance. That is what I do. Four boys, 16, 14, 8, and 6. Married to my college sweetheart, 19 years. Known her for 26 years. That is my life.
That is a sweet life, man. So, and you've been doing the dad, I mean, you've been involved in your project for a really long time now, right?
I mean, it started with a really dark moment about 10 years ago. Mm. But I didn't start podcasting until 2015. So I've been podcasting now for 7.5 years and almost 1,000 episodes. I think actually we're over 1,000 episodes now to date.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. So yeah, I would say really starting like full on about 7 years ago.
Do you mind talking about the genesis of how you started from that dark moment?
Sure. Yeah, I think it probably makes some sense if I gave you a picture of maybe my childhood, because I think it really started from there.
Okay.
My mom and biological father, they were married in 1971. They got married very young, like 21 years old.
Okay.
And they were married for about 4 years before they had me. I was born in 75. And then after I was born, my dad and my mom got divorced. And it was a really bitter, horrible divorce from what I understand. Mm-hmm. I don't know all the details, but it was pretty bad. Mm-hmm. So much so that my dad just completely, he was out, left. And I had no recollection of him whatsoever. So, you know, I was raised just by my mom until I was 4. And the interesting thing about that was that I remember being in preschool, mm-hmm. and I remember men coming to pick up their kids from school. So I knew what a dad was.
Sure.
In my 4-year-old mind, like I literally thought moms go out and find dads, like kids just magically appear by storks or whatever, you know, dropped off at the porch, and then moms find dads eventually. And my mom hadn't found my dad yet. And that was, it didn't matter to me. It didn't affect me in any way. I was like, oh, she hasn't found him yet.
And that made sense in your mind.
Yeah, it makes sense in your 4-year-old mind.
Yeah.
But I remember the first time my mom brought a man home for the very first time after, you know, dating this guy for a while, and they met at work, and I'll never forget. My mom even told me, she's like, I'm going to have a friend over for dinner and I'd really like for you to meet him. And I remember her telling me it was a guy, and I was like, oh wow. I was like, I wonder if this is the dad. I wonder mm-hmm. if this guy's my dad. Mm-hmm. So this guy came walking in. It's 1979. He's wearing a trench coat, has a briefcase, 3-piece suit. He was a white collar data software engineer for a computer company, and came walking in. And I remember, man, to this day, like what it felt like. I was like, oh my gosh, like this male figure coming in my home, shook his hand. And the very first question I asked this guy, the very first thing that rattled off my mind, my mouth was, are you going to be my dad? Like, and I just remember this guy being like, holy crap. Like, what did I do?
Yeah. Yeah.
But they did. They got married. I think my mom kind of really took that as a sign of like, oh my God, like I need to get like kind of like a Jerry Maguire moment where, you know, the kid hugs Tom Cruise and the mom is like, holy shit. And I think my mom kind of took that and ran with it. I don't think my mom ever like really truly loved the guy though. I think she loved the idea of it. Mm. And they were married for 6 years. And what I can tell you is that was my experience with a dad. And he adopted me. I still to this day have his last name. Mm-hmm. And I just remember like after they got married, I was like, man, our family's complete. This is so cool. I've got a dad. I'm like, cool. We're off to the races. And their marriage was very tumultuous. It was he drank a lot. My mom drank a lot. There was a lot of outbursts. There was a lot of abuse. There was a lot of yelling. There was a lot of screaming. There was a lot of unpredictability and not a whole lot of safety. And, you know, cops were called to my house sometimes, which was the norm. And it was crazy. And he beat on me quite a bit, yelled at me. And I just figured, you know, that's just what happens.
When yeah.
It's just kind of like what you do.
Wow.
And that wasn't. So when I was 10, they got divorced and I've never seen him since. Actually I found out not too long ago he died.
Oh wow.
Which, you know, it was what it was. But the fascinating thing was when I was 12, I actually met my biological father for the first time. Cause I started asking a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. I was like, wait a second. Like, this guy didn't come into the picture until I was 4. Like, where did I come from?
Yeah.
My mom told me that she was married before. And that was a surprise to me. I was like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. So I met him. He lived 3 miles from us. Had no idea.
This whole time.
And whole time. Yeah. And he was remarried at the time, had a 2-year-old son, another one on the way. And I remember meeting him and I was so overjoyed. I was like, oh my God, this is my dad, my real dad, you know? And we had this relationship and he came to my Little League games. We hung out like every week. I hung out at his house. I had a 2-year-old half brother, another one on the way. And I just remember like feeling really happy that my dad was around again. Mm-hmm. And something happened that was very odd about 5 months into our relationship. I felt him like kind of start to drift a little bit. And like, there was something that was kind of pressing on him. Mm. And the best way I can describe what that feeling was is imagine you're dating a woman and she's not into you anymore, but she hasn't told you yet, but you know, it's coming.
I've been there, bro.
Yeah, man. We all have, right?
Yeah.
But that was the feeling. And I remember calling him one time and I was like, hey, you know, what's going on? Like, I just kind of feel like something's not right. And that's when he told me, it's me. It's not you. I can't do this. It's too complicated. I'm trying to start over. And that was it. And he left again.
Wow.
And I remember, dude, that impacted me big time. I just was lost. I was in 8th grade at the time, gave up on school. I failed the 8th grade. I had to do 8th grade twice. Mm. I emotionally overate. My mom continued to date just ridiculous, crazy, toxic, alcoholic men. And, you know, by the time I was 18, my mom had been married for the 3rd time, dated several men in between, and they were all just crazy people. Mm-hmm. I ended up kind of turning my life around though. I finished 8th grade, went on to high school, went on to college, got my degree. And was in medical device sales. And a couple things happened when I was 30. And this is kind of where the story sort of begins and ends. Mm-hmm. When I was 30, I had been married for a couple years. I was successful in my career, medical device industry. And I was expecting our first son back in 2006. And I'm in a coffee shop here in St. Louis. And I was there every Monday for a meeting with my sales team. We're just sitting there having our meeting. And I don't know what it was, but a man walked in the coffee shop and he caught my eye. And I just looked over at him and I was like, holy shit, that's my dad. The one that I hadn't seen him since I was 12.
Wow.
18 years later. And I remember being with this girl who was on my team. You know, she looked at me. She's like, are you all right? She's like, hello, are you still here? And I'm like, sorry. I was like, you're not going to believe this. I was like, but my father just walked in here. And she's like, I'm sorry, what? And I told her, I was like, yeah, my father. And she had knew about it. And she's like, are you talking about the same guy? And when you were 12? I'm like, yeah. She's like, where is he? I'm like, he's right there. She's like, oh my God. She got all excited. She's like, what are you going to do? What are you going to say to him? I'm like, I'm not going to say anything to him. She's like, I'm sorry. You're just going to let your dad walk out of here without saying anything to him? I'm like, yeah, that's the plan.
Yeah.
Like, what am I going to say to him?
Yeah,
like, I want to go over there and probably hit him.
Yeah.
You know, and so she just got up without saying another word. She just got up and walked over to him. And I was like, oh my God, what is she doing? And she brought him over to the table. And my dad just walked over very humbly and he shook my hand. He's like, hey, you know, I make my dad sound like a bum. He's not. He's a very successful entrepreneur. And he shook my hand and he's like, hey, he's like, how are you doing? And I'm like, fine.
How are you? Yeah.
I wasn't nice, but I wasn't an ass, but sure. I was kind of in between. And, you know, he was like, you know, he's like, well, are you married? Do you have kids? And I'm like, yeah, I'm married. I'm expecting my first son. And he's like, well, we should get together for breakfast. And I just remember taking out my business cards at the time. You know, smartphones weren't even around. And I just slid my business card over. And I just said, I'll tell you what, man. If you want to get together, that's on you. You can contact me. And he's like, okay. And I didn't expect to hear from him. And the next day I woke up and I had an email that was like a dissertation. Yeah. This guy just poured his heart out. Mm. Basically, the theme of the email was, I've regretted every day since you were 12 and even before that. And if you'd have me, I'd really like to get to know you. And I waffled on that for a moment and I accepted his invitation to breakfast. I'll never forget this. We were at breakfast and I remember being nervous as all get out. I'm like, what can I talk to him about? What do we talk about? What can I ask him about? What are the rules? I have no idea. And I remember being in conversation with him and I remember stopping and I said, I just got to pause here for a second, man. I was like, I don't know what to do here. I was like, I don't know what we're allowed to talk about. I don't know what I'm allowed to ask you. I don't know what our conversations look like. I have no clue what the rules are here. I'm lost. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget this. My dad leaned in and he just kind of like looked at me and he goes, and you think I do? And I was like, oh crap. Mm-hmm. I saw my dad for a human being. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, he's just as lost as I am in this. So here we are 17 years later. I've got a great relationship with my dad. The past is the past. I've got a great relationship with my two younger half brothers. Mm-hmm. I was actually in my youngest brother's wedding here last week, but Dad Edge really got started because I grew up with these toxic, crazy father figures in my life that would kind of come and go.
Yeah.
And the dark moment that I'm referring to is when I became a father for the first time, I was like, I'm going to do this right. And I know all these things of what not to do. But what I found out was there's a laundry list of things of what not to do isn't enough. Hmm. It's almost like going to Home Depot and you buy that brand new charbroil barbecue pit and you open up the instructions and the instructions are like, here's 100 ways not to put this together.
Yeah.
Best of luck. Right. It's just, it doesn't work. And at the time that this happened, my oldest son was 6, my youngest was 4, and that's all I had was 2 boys. And I was your typical half in, half out dad. Short on patience. Marriage was mediocre at best. Just thought that's what life was supposed to be. My 4-year-old at the time, he's 14 now, stepped out of line as any 4-year-old would. And I lost my cool. And I always swore to myself as many times as I was hit and abused growing up, I would never hit my kids out of anger. Mm-hmm. And I spanked my son on his rear end. And I spanked him and he lost his balance and he fell. And I immediately was like, oh my God, what the hell did I just do? And I went to go pick him up and he shuddered as he looked at me and I was like, oh my God. And in that moment, I didn't see my son. I saw me. I knew in that moment, something had to change. And that's, I went in my office that night. I had tears coming out of my eyes. Mm-hmm. And what do you do when you're an adult and you want to forget whatever you just did? You go on Facebook and go see everybody else's highlight reel.
Yeah.
And here's where Dad Edge began. I saw this button in the left-hand corner. It said, create a page. And I'm a very faith-based person, and I swear that was divine intervention, and I just hit that button. Thing pops up, and it says, what do you want to name your page? I said, The Good Dad Project. And at the time, I was the project. I told myself, I do not know what I'm doing, and I don't know what good looks like, but I'm going to learn. And I'm going to go out and learn something new every single day, and I'm just going to post it here. I never did it for a following. I did it for my own, like, kind of personal journal. Mm-hmm. And I posted it there and I was diligent about it. And then suddenly that's when life really started to change, is when I started learning. And that's how it began. Great question. So I was learning, number one, that every person was just as lost as I was. Like we really did not know. Like there's a lot of guys out there that just did not know how to do this, right? And it was like one of the biggest kept secrets that we're supposed to know.
Yeah.
So dude, I started learning things about patience. Mm-hmm. I started learning things about communication with my wife. I started learning things about being fully immersed and present in the moment. I started learning things about what conversational excellence looked like, you know, what true intimacy looked like with my wife, things like that. And I started really what I've learned over the past 10 years. Here's the scary thing, and this will make so much sense if you hear it. Is this, by the way, Kelly, is this what you do full time?
This is not what I do full time. This is, okay. I'm hoping to get to a point where I can do this full time. But this is a passion project that has ballooned more than a passion project now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome to hear. So what do you do full time?
Full time. I work at a pediatric setting, providing support, spiritual support to families and staff and all sorts of situations you can think of.
So spiritual support, what does that look like?
So basically I'm a chaplain at a pediatric hospital. So I go in and talk to families who are on the good end of the spectrum and just like, you know, are having a tough time in the hospital, to families who are in crisis because their child is not doing so well in the hospital. I mean, every family that ends up there as inpatient is in some sort of crisis, unless it's something that was like planned, like a planned surgery or something like that. But even then, the anxiety that comes with your child going into surgery, however major or minor, you know, there's a lot of anxiety around that. So I'm meeting with families from that end of the spectrum. I'm meeting with families from the other end of the spectrum who are having to say goodbye to their kids and helping them navigate all of that. So families that are in between, as well as staff who are caring for these patients and families. And so that's my full time. And I'm trying to transition out of that so that I could be doing this full time, because I've been doing that for almost 10 years now, and I need a break.
Well, first of all, I didn't expect that, but that
no one really expects that when that question gets asked.
I mean, my gosh, man. I know that this is maybe more interactive than you expected, but obviously you have to have a very solid foundation of spiritual knowledge to do that role.
Yeah. I mean, it's shifted, it's grown, it's been challenged. There are days that I don't feel like I have anything solid.
Sure.
And there are other days that I'm like, you know what? I can lean on whatever my beliefs are, my paradigm for seeing the world is, to help me get through this situation so that I can help this family get through what they're going through. So it's layered perspective, really nuanced paradigms, just trying to, a lot of compartmentalization, to be honest with you. And just a lot of understanding that I am just a small drop in a larger cosmic bucket.
And I have to think that you have this history of your spiritual beliefs, like probably some in-depth Bible study, you know, scripture, you know, the word, you've spent a lot of time studying that, correct?
Yeah. I mean, I got my master's in divinity at seminary school. So I spent some time there.
You have a master's in that.
Yeah. Which I don't really consider as something major, because coming out of that was a challenge in and of itself. I would have to say to you, quite honestly, the past 2 years have been more significant for me in terms of my understanding, my spiritual understanding, theological, working through a whole bunch of different things. Like, that's been more significant than the 2.5 years that I spent in seminary.
So well said, beautifully said. You have this incredible foundation of a master's degree in this type of study in this field. And you also have this beautiful real world experience, and no experience is the same, right? When you're interacting with these, but there have been reps that you've put in to get to where you're at. And that's exactly what I want to, like what I'm about ready to say. Mm-hmm. Usually when I say this, people are like, holy cow, I've never really heard it quite like that, but now it makes so much sense. So you have a master's degree in this. Mm-hmm. I want you to think about for a moment that, let's just say you grew up atheist, mm-hmm. or agnostic. You mm-hmm. just have no beliefs, right?
Sure.
And let's just say, you know, the organization you work for comes to you and says, hey, Kelly, tomorrow you're going to be our chaplain. Don't worry. You'll figure it out. Best time of your whole life. Don't worry about it. And by the way, your first meeting with your with this first family is 9 a.m. tomorrow. Now you go in there and what's the feeling? Let's just say you grew up agnostic. You just have no beliefs, but this is the role you're going to play. How are you feeling going into that first meeting with that family?
Well, I'll tell you a quick story because it's hard to put myself in that headspace since this has been my whole life.
Yeah.
But I think if I'm understanding where you're trying to take me is somewhere that I've been before, which was literally my first experience as a chaplain on the job. So here I am fresh out of seminary. My tradition historically has been a very conservative, focused on you need to have the answer, not an answer, the answer, right? And that's my setting for 2.5 years in this master's program. So of course I leave out of seminary. I get into this program, a chaplaincy program. I had never heard what chaplaincy was about before. So I get there and of course I'm seeing myself as like the person with the answers. Everybody else is wrong because that's just the tradition.
Yeah.
And my first night as a chaplain intern at an adult hospital, I get a page for the family member of this woman who had just been declared brain dead, but she was on a ventilator still. So I get over to the room and it was in the MICU, that stands for medical ICU. And I get there and the patient's niece was in the room. And so she went out and she went to get her mom, who's the patient's sister. And I'm just standing there waiting for the sister to come in. And when the woman walks in, she sees me and she says, "Oh, thank you so much, chaplain, for coming. I'm feeling good about myself. I wanted to talk to you because I've been asking people this question, but no one has been able to give me the answer, Larry." What? I'm like, serendipity, baby. I am the guy with the answer because that's my training. So I try to keep it cool because I knew whatever answer I was going to give this, whatever question this lady was going to give me, I was going to knock that answer out the park. Mm-hmm. And she says to me, "The doctors just said that my sister is dead, but what's holding her is this breathing machine. Could you please tell me if she's dead, but I still see her breathing? Could you please tell me where is her soul?"
Oh boy.
In my head, I'm like, Jesus. Like, what the hell do I say to that? Because I come from a tradition that does not hold a view that most Christian traditions do. And so now I'm in distress and I have no idea. I feel so underprepared. I feel like a fraud, basically, standing in front of this lady now who is asking me a question that is very significant to her. So to get to what I think you were posing, at that moment, I felt so unprepared, just completely way over my head. Yeah. I was humbled very quickly by not knowing, number one, what the implications of that question she was asking were, why she was even asking the question in the first place, how to answer the question with all of the new knowledge about chaplaincy that I've learned, you know, in the 2 weeks leading up to that moment. And I just wanted to get the heck up out of there, bro. Like, honestly speaking, I just wanted the ground to open me up, swallow me, and I would just disappear and just leave that lady with her questions, and that's it.
So thank you for that story. I didn't expect that. And I would say, welcome to fatherhood. right? And welcome to marriage. Because, and here's the interesting thing, you had training, you had a master's degree in this, and you still weren't ready for that question. So here's what I'll share with you. 990 hours. That's the hours of training it takes to go from police cadet to officer. Mm. About 10 years. That's what it takes to go from medical student to surgeon. Mm-hmm. You know, you got 4 years undergrad, 4 years of medical school, 2 years of residency and fellowship. Mm-hmm. It takes over 700 hours to go from fire cadet to firefighter. Mm-hmm. All these things that we are highly trained in. Some people have 4-year degrees. Some people have master's degrees. Some people have PhDs, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Here's another thing too. Think about this. In order for us to get a driver's license, you have to be a certain age.
Yep.
You have to take a test and you have to take a driving test mm-hmm. with a cop in the car with you. Mm-hmm. When you go get married, you have to have a marriage license, mm-hmm. but you can just get a marriage license. There's no, oh, you have to take these courses on conversational excellence, intimacy, empathy, being able to actively listen to her, create space, create an environment of psychological safety. All these things, right, that are so important.
I'll tell you this. My wife and I, when we were getting married, leading up to getting married, we had premarital counseling that did not include any of those things that you just mentioned.
Right.
Yeah.
And the same thing with being a parent. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Parenthood back in the 80s, but it was one of Keanu Reeves's first movies. And he's like, you need a license to catch a fish. You need a license to drive a car, but they'll let any guy be a dad.
And it's right? such
and
a
that's,
true.
That's absolutely true. Yeah. So if you think about it, we really have no training. Like in no other area of our entire lives is it expected to be like, don't worry, man, you'll figure it out. Best time of your whole life. In order for you to even be in the military, not even special operations or anything, you have to go through 14 weeks to 6 months of basic training.
Yeah.
Right. To be a Navy SEAL, it takes for like, can you imagine what our SEAL team would be like if they're like, hey, today you're a SEAL. Don't worry. You'll figure it out. Best time of your whole life. We're going to throw you into combat.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. But that's what happens when we're a father. And that's what happens when we're a husband. And then we wonder, well, why is this such a mess at times? And why am I so lost? Shouldn't this come naturally to me? That's the biggest lie that we tell ourselves. That's the biggest question we ask. That's a lie. Man, you don't know. And it's really okay if you don't know because we're not taught. And I would even argue to say that some of the lessons that we learned growing up by watching our own parents, not that they were bad, but they didn't know any better either. And that's what we're learning from. That's our blueprint.
Yeah.
And then we wonder like, holy crap. So here to answer your question, right, to bring it full circle, you have to learn skills to be a father that is present, that is functional, that is, you know, effective. You have to learn skills to be a husband, right? So like, for instance, when I work with men and I ask them about marriage, I'm like, what's the one thing you want to work on? I always hear communication. I'm like, well, okay, what do you want out of communication? Well, I want to communicate better. I want to communicate more. I ask them, well, what does better look like? And they're like, well, it's just better. It's better, you know, conversations. Well, what does more look like? Well, it's more time. I'm like, okay, well, how much time are you spending with your wife right now communicating? I don't know, like 10 minutes a day. Okay, well, if you had an hour, if you had more time, would that get you better? What would you do with it? And they're like, I really don't know. Okay, so really, so I'll rattle off some things. And by the way, if this sounds foreign to your listeners, that's really okay because most people don't. If you don't know what tactical empathy is, if you don't know what emotional labeling is, if you don't know what mirroring is, if you don't know what proper voice tone is all about, if you don't know what generative questions are, intimate conversation starters, and creating an environment of psychological safety, those are 5 out of 9 skill sets that I teach. But 5 that literally, even if you just knew those 5, if you even knew 3 of them, mm-hmm. it would put you on a whole new level with communicating with your wife versus like, I'm sorry, not sorry to say, but the way men communicate is different than women. And the way women communicate is different than men. And what you have to do is you have to mesh those two worlds together and make the best part of it. So like, I'll give you a quick example. Kelly, if I come to you and start talking to you about something that is really a struggle for me right now, mm-hmm. so maybe it's a crucible that I'm going through. Mm-hmm. I am not talking to you because I want to vent to you. I'm talking to you because what do you think I need to do? What's my right next move? What am I not seeing here? Help me solve this problem. That's mm-hmm. why I'm coming to you in the first mm-hmm. place. Mm-hmm. When our wives come to us, that's the role we play. And so we try to fix the problem. We try to be very solution-based. And we do it out of nobility and we do it out of love because it's like, I want to take her pain away. I want to help her.
She just wanted to
be. And in her mind, she's like, why are you telling me what to do? You're not even listening to me. This is so condescending. And because you're telling me what I should do, you're basically telling me you don't trust me enough to figure this out. And why are you not even listening to me?
Yeah. It's the
classic. And all the while, the guys are like, but I am listening to you. And no, you're not. Yeah. Yes, I am. And then it turns into this.
Yeah.
You know, what we see all the time.
Yeah. These five principles, I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong, wouldn't just improve communication in this regard with spouse, but even with our children.
And there's a reason for that. Your wife and your kids have the three same basic needs, the same three. And our needs as men are different. Your wife and kids need to feel seen, they need to feel heard, and they need to feel safe. Those three things. When your kids feel that and your wife feels that, they're like, oh, dad is the best.
Absolutely.
Right? Or he's the best. Now, our needs are different as men. We need to be appreciated, respected. Mm-hmm. This last one is not easy for guys to hear, but it is what it is. Validated. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we want confirmation. Am I good enough? Am I worthy enough? Am I enough? Mm-hmm. Right. And that is such a deep core to a man. For your wife let's just talk to all the guys. If your wife just set you aside and for 7 seconds, she just looked at you and said, Kelly, I don't tell you this enough, but I just want to tell you, thank you so much for doing everything that you do for us and working so hard. We really appreciate you. I mean, do the skies not open up and you feel like you're on cloud nine? Bro, like you don't even need sex. Like that just feels like the best, right?
I'm finding other projects in the house to do just for the heck of it now.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That story that you shared, I know our time is getting close. That story that you shared about spanking your child and the way that he responded to you, that hit home because in a similar moment of just completely losing my cool, I screamed at my son about a year ago and I would never forget the look in his eyes. And that was also the night when I realized something needs to change because that can't be the basis of our relationship. That can't be the way that he sees me. And I think to really put a framework on what we're talking about, this lack of training, lack of preparation that we have as men who have become fathers is really significant. The only thing that we have are the experiences that we emerge from, positive or negative. Well, and it is so important, regardless of what that experience is, if it's positive, then being able to talk through it professionally with someone can make that person feel more prepared to create an even more positive experience for their kids, potentially. But especially if it's a negative one, like yours, like my own, it is so imperative then to just be able to have working, tangible, bite-sized tools in our toolbox for when we become husbands, for when we become fathers. Nothing challenged me more than when I became a husband. My wife challenged me. That's one of the reasons why I love my wife. She challenged me to be a better man. But then my son came and he challenged me in ways that I was completely unprepared for.
Right.
And now looking back at our experience, how much I've grown over the past 2.5 years after he's come into my life, had I known some of the things that I know now, I mean, it would have been a totally different experience. So it is so imperative for men, particularly who are in the process of becoming fathers, to do that pre-work, if you will. And it's even more imperative for men who are fathers to really just get over our egos, get over ourselves, and just like go out and find someone professionally to be able to talk to, find a community that can help get you to where we need to be to become our better selves.
I totally agree, man. Like, think about that for a second. Think about what would happen to the world and families, husbands and men, if we just simply said, it's really okay if you don't know what to do right now. And then to follow that up with, and you can learn it just like anything else. It becomes a practice, yeah. Right? You know, and one other thing that I'll share with you, so I created a masterclass on, it's called Creating More Patience. It's a course. Basically, I had a podcast guest tell me this, and he was a Navy SEAL, actually. And Navy SEALs are known for being able to stay calm, cool, collected. They're very resilient mentally and physically and emotionally tough, but they've gotten that way through training. They weren't born like that. Mm-hmm. The creature that we are, the human being, we are not a patient creature. We want instant gratification. Like, that's what the brain seeks. It's yeah. wired in us, right? Yeah. So here's the cool thing. A lot of guys, when I ask them, when it comes to marriage, what do you want? Usually it's communication and intimacy. Oh, as a father, what do you want? I want to have more patience. But here's the lie that we tell ourselves. The lie that we tell ourselves is, I'm a father, so I automatically need to have more. I just need to naturally be patient. No. In fact, if anything, you trying to be a naturally patient father is almost nearly impossible.
Yeah.
Now, what I will tell you is patience is actually resilience. It's just packaged up and marketed and bottled just a little bit differently. But if you can actually sharpen your skills of being more emotionally resilient, and that's what I teach in the masterclasses, this is how you actually become more emotionally resilient. When the storm is coming, right? The lighthouse doesn't jump out into the storm. The lighthouse doesn't jump out into the water. The lighthouse stays calm and lights the way. It doesn't get involved with the storm. What happens when we lose our patience is the lighthouse jumps into the water and becomes frantic and chaos and starts to drown just along with the tugboats. But if you can remain within your confidence, within your power, within your resilience,
yeah.
and you know the skills, most importantly, the skills and the tactics to do that, suddenly resilience and patience, you're like, holy crap. It's not a feeling. It's a skill that I can learn and then practice.
Absolutely.
And that's the beautiful thing about all these skills.
That just speaks to how demystifying this whole thing can be, right? Because that was the sense that I got becoming a parent. Hey, now that you're a father, and I'm sure my wife experienced it in her own context, now that you're a mom, there is this expectation that you have to know everything. And if you've never done something before, how do you expect to know what to do if you've never done that thing that you are currently doing, right? I've never been a father before. You know, people say, I have nieces and nephews. My friends have kids. I worked at a day. Awesome. You didn't have to take that kid back home with you. You didn't have to take full responsibility for their survival. So when you enter into that space, when you enter into that role, assume that role for the first time, even for a repeat parent, this is the first time that you're becoming a parent for the second time. And this is the first time that you're becoming a parent for the third time. So everything is really just a series of firsts because you've never been in that situation before.
Yep.
And so if you've never been in that situation before, yeah, you have two other kids if you're a third time parent, or one other child if you're a second time parent, or whatever the case is. But that child is an individual with his or her own nuances. The second child has their own nuances, and so far and so forth. So it really is, it's awesome. You can remember, you can, you know, model, maybe you can take a little bit of that to work with, but it's really all a series of firsts. And so there is this embeddedness in being what society teaches us as men and what it means to be a man, that we have to figure these things out, that we have to know. Because, Larry, if you ask in front of your boys, then you a bitch.
Right. Yeah. Or you're less than.
Or you're right? less than. Or, oh, bro, yeah, what? You don't know how to do that. We're right back in school. Like, what? You don't know how to do that? And all of those feelings that come with, you know, a little bit of FOMO, a little bit of being left out, all of that stuff. But listen, man, I've learned very quickly, fatherhood is not one of those places where these things ought to matter. Those things don't matter. What's important is that I'm presenting myself daily to my son in a way that helps his development in the best possible ways, and trying to avoid a lot of the nonsense that I had to deal with growing up. just recreating a totally different atmosphere for him to grow and thrive and what have you. And if it means that I have to be a little bitch, then guess what? I'm going to be a little bitch. But if that going to help my son, then you could call me a bitch day and night. That's cool. But guess who's benefiting from that? My low man is. So,
right.
So to me, that's the mentality.
Can I share one final thought on that?
Absolutely.
And I love what you just said. I want men to consider this. If you don't know what to do and you're being very protective of your ego, and what that could look like is, I don't want anyone to know this. I don't want to be the one to ask for help. If I'm listening to a podcast, talking to a counselor, hiring a coach, reading a book, does that mean I'm less than? No, it actually means you're more than, because it's you're hungry to seek the skills to do better. But this is where I let men off the hook. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what to do and you don't know what good looks like, it's not your fault. It's not your fault at all, because we're not taught any other way. And society sure as heck doesn't have any parameters set up in place. Oh, you want to get married? Well, you got to take these 9 classes first.
Facts.
Oh, you want to have a kid? You got to take these 9 classes first. You know, society kind of puts it on us as like, you just got to figure it out. And in no other, I don't know about you, but if I need a total knee, I don't want some guy opening me up on the first day and be like, where'd you go to medical school? Oh, I didn't. I watched a couple of videos. Don't worry. I'll figure it out. No, you're not cutting on me.
YouTube University, but, baby.
Right. YouTube universe. I love that. But so it's not your fault as a man. But here's where the tough love comes. It is your fault if you don't do anything about it.
100%.
If you lean into like, well, I just don't know what to do. I didn't have a good father figure growing up. I didn't have this. I didn't have that. So I just don't know what to do. Well, you know what? Now you're a victim and I don't have any remorse for you. But here's where I love men who are humble and are hungry, and they just want it, right? They want the information. They're like, you know what? I don't know what this looks like, but we live in a day and age, Kelly, and you know this, and so do I, that resources are plentiful.
At your
resources
fingertips.
Are plentiful. You can learn this stuff, mm-hmm. right? So what I encourage men is, if you don't know, it's okay. It's really okay. You're the norm. However, if you don't go learn, then that's on you, man.
Absolutely. Right? Man, thank you so much for your time, bro. This has been a really, really, really fruitful conversation. Thank you for sharing your story from childhood to how this whole thing got started. It resonates with me because over the past several months, I have been on this journey of psyching myself up to finally reaching out to my father and wanting to uncover what his story is so that I can get a better sense of who he is, to finally start trying to see him as a human being. I've been able to do that from afar, just reflecting on my own experience and the times that I've fallen flat on my face. And I'm like, man, I'm 37 years old. He used to be 37 years old. It's not easy. Our contexts are different. I've achieved more on a personal level than he has, and still, it's not easy. You know, I'm trying to figure out, and I'm pretty sure he tried to figure it out. So to hear that what your process was like in bite sizes and where you and your father are currently, you know, 17 years later, it's encouraging. And yeah, so I'm going to reflect on that even more the rest of the day and see where that leads, because I know that's something that I need for myself. I'm also going to need to do that for the sake of my son, because he's going to start asking questions pretty soon. And it's a part of me. It's a part of him. It's a part of the story of why you and I are even talking right now, because this thing is so important to me. So I really appreciate you sharing your story with me, man.
Back at you. Thanks for sharing yours with mine. And that incredible story, super authentic, of that first time, you know, being in that situation where, you know, the woman was brain dead and not knowing what to say. I truly believe it's the imperfections and the human side, you know, that we get to see of people, that, you know, hearing stories like that just makes you like people even more. And thanks for sharing that with me. We'll be right back.
Thank you.